Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, Kim. Yes, Kim and the band for that very great, inspiring theme song, Clouds of Abundance. Yes, it is another day in paradise here in Phoenix, Arizona. Welcome all into our Paradise One studio where every day is a holiday and the party never stops. Yay!
Yay!
All righty, I am. Yes, I am Nazim Rashid, author of Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self, with our program based on this book today. All right, we'll always start with the opening prayer to get our blessing. Like I've mentioned before on this program, whatever name or reference fits your belief system will do just fine when I am mentioning God. Just know that we did not create ourselves, and in knowing this reality, we can give attention and honor the source of our creation for guidance and direction. I am using God as an universal theme and is not relegated to any particular religion or belief system. With the name of God, we thank you for another opportunity to express our appreciation for the life you have given us. Thank you for instilling in us the desire to be of service to others. Thank you for the life we are living and the breath we are breathing. Yes. Thank you for the help many from around the world are receiving right now from this broadcast. We thank you for everything we see and also what we don't see. Thank you for this process of life. Amen. All right. For our show notes, we have Dorothy. Take it away.
Let us hear from you as we learn the needs of our child self. The chapters in the book that address these needs are forgiveness, validation, self-esteem, visualization, self-image, communication and listening skills, optimism, gratitude, faith, spirituality, codependency and addictions, recovery issues, managing and identifying emotions. Identifying and managing emotions. You can connect with Nazim using his email address, nrbookclub@cox.net. That's N as in Nazim, R as in Rashid, book club, nrbookclub@cox.net. He sends out blogs and book excerpts every month from fans who connect with him. Book-related information such as book signing dates, webinars, and workshops are sent from there as well. The book Reconnected will be released and available by the spring of 2011. Nazim?
All righty, all righty. Very good. Well, this is the Reconnected Show, the key to personal power, the key to personal power. This is a personal growth program designed with your inner peace in mind. Discussions will be based on my book, Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self. This book contains a methodology for filling the many emotional voids experienced in childhood. Reconnected is for those adults who want to create real internal change in their lives by addressing significant emotional events in their past which are affecting them presently. It is also for parents who want vital information in raising their genius young souls. All right. Mentors who can appreciate additional tools for their mentees, and teachers who would share us more methods for shaping, motivating, and inspiring our students, reflecting the greatness that they already possess within. Couples wanting a better relationship can also benefit from the personal growth tools being offered. Yes, yes, yes. And the themes of the show parallel the chapters of the book. So we have different guests coming on to talk about the themes from their own perspective. This way we all learn more from these wonderful topics, personal growth areas. Okay? Now, as you know, you regulars know, we always do a happy news segment. There are great things going on all over the world, like we just saw in Egypt. The people rose up and they decided to take control of the country, and they're partying and having a great time. That's happy news right there. All right, so we're going to celebrate, and we're going to have a segment right now. And from our international and national news desk, we have Dorothy. Take it away.
The title of our show today is Teenager Beats Rare Brain Condition and Saves Sight After Her Father Finds Miracle Cure on the Internet. A teenager has beaten a rare brain condition that nearly robbed her of her sight. After her father found a miracle cure on the internet, Charlotte Durham has a condition that causes her body to pump spinal fluid into her skull, pushing down on her brain and causing migraines. Doctors warned the 19-year-old that she would have to undergo a series of risky and expensive operations to try and save her sight and halt the horrendous headaches that had plagued her for years. But the teenager has given a pioneering new treatment. She was pioneering new treatment after her father read about a promising medical drug trial online and convinced doctors to try it. Just 6 months later, Charlotte from Cresswell, Staffordshire, has been given the all clear. She said, "I'm so grateful to my dad for finding the treatment and to the hospital for funding it. I dread to think where I would be without it." Charlotte was the first person in the UK to be prescribed octreotide, a drug usually used to help hormone imbalances to cure idiopathic intracranial hypertension, which affects just one in every 100,000 people. Andy Durham, 50, an engineer, Googled her condition and discovered a paper about a medical trial that had been held in Greece 3 years ago. The results showed that 24 out of 26 patients were completely cured of the condition after taking the drug. Cured of the condition after 6 months of taking the drug.
Oh, okay.
He took her findings to his daughter's neurologist at University Hospital of North Staffordshire, who agreed to buy a 2-week supply of the 28-pound, or in U.S. dollars, that's $45.06 a day drug. Charlotte, with the drug octreotide, which cost $45.06 in U.S., that's U.S. dollars, a day, saved the teenager from having surgery. Andy said, "I've got a stubborn streak and was sure I could find a cure somewhere out there. I was amazed when I discovered that despite the successful Greek trial in 2007, no one has followed it up."
Wow.
"We spent long nights looking for some clue on the internet before one of us found four words on one site suggesting some progress had been made. We found more information and took what we had to the doctors, who got hold of copies of the full paper. Amazingly, it showed patients felt big improvements on average after 10 days, and after 20 days were almost symptom-free." After starting the treatment, Charlotte quickly began to notice improvements, but when the trial funding ran out, the family had to plead with South Staffordshire Primary Care Trust to pay for the $8,690 six-month treatment. Charlotte's clinical support worker said, "My consultant says I'm in remission. I'm so happy. I saw dramatic improvements in my condition almost straight away. The headaches weren't as bad. The noise in my ears had gone, as had pressure behind my eyes. I'm shocked it has made an impact on my eyes because they are the last things to repair themselves. I'm grateful to PCT fund, the PCT funded it. I dread to think where I'd be without it." Charlotte and her family now hope that the unusual treatment can be used to help others who suffer from IHH. Charlotte's mom, Sharon, 49, an ambulance technician, said, "Within 8 months of Charlotte getting the drug, we have helped about 10 people get octreotide all around the world."
Okay.
"We get so many people emailing us thanking Charlotte for telling her story because they say they wouldn't have known about it if it wasn't for her. We're surprised how it has gone, but really pleased, especially because it has worked for Charlotte."
Mm-hmm. Okay, there we go. Yes. All right. Yeah, it's very important to understand, you know, when someone tells you and you go to the doctor and they say, well, this is your diagnosis. You can't stop there. You have to get another opinion, and find a way to make things happen for you. All right? You deserve the best, and therefore you are to seek the best. All right, very good. Okay, here we go. Today's theme, communication and listening skills, part four. Okay, we're on parent and child relationships now. Now, as I always do, I always recap from what we talked about last week so that will inspire you to go back and hear the whole program. Mm-hmm. And also for those who maybe heard it last week, to this way you'll get more of the main points I'm bringing out right now. And maybe spark you to go back and hear it again. All right, because sometimes you got to hear messages like this over and over and over. Maybe on the eighth time or ninth time, you'll say, oh, I didn't hear that before. The light bulb just came on. Isn't that wonderful? Yeah, so it's like that. So that's why it's important to hear things repeatedly, you know. And after a while, you know, it gets in there. It's okay. Last week we had a good friend of the show, marriage and family therapist, Jeff Gaisley, to discuss communication and listening skills as they relate to the dysfunctional family we have played out in childhood and how this role affects adult relationships. This idea of dysfunctional family roles originated from the alcohol and the other drug-addicted family models. When the addict who became clean and sober went back to the family, problems started to arise again, and that made therapists look again as to why this was happening. They realized that the family members also had a contributing problem, and then the term codependency started being used. Codependents were overly worried about their partners that they forgot their own, forgot about their own issues and so forth and needs. In doing this, the kids were being neglected. The kids became adults emotionally long before their time. In surviving this dysfunctional situation, they took on certain roles. The first one is usually the hero. What they tend to do is become a parentified child. Parentified child. Isn't it wonderful? Interesting. Parentified child. They act like a parent well before their time. They will be super responsible, taking care of themselves and the younger siblings. They tend to be a bit harsh with them, letting them know they are in charge. They will try to take care of mom and dad also by pitching in when not asked to and not really needed. Their intention is to get the parents to calm down, which really doesn't work. They or anyone has the ability to make anybody change. Yeah, they don't have the ability to make anybody change. We don't have that. The heroes will stifle their own needs, sacrificing their own for the sake of the family. They will feel like a failure because no matter what they do, it is not good enough. They will exhibit perfectionism and a controlling nature. This is the kind of person that will find a project in their mates that they can control or fix. They are attracted to someone who needs help. They are trying to get their own self-esteem met by fixing something. On the positive side, they really care about people and wind up being the best healthcare professionals. Their communication style will be authoritative and at times demeaning without really realizing it. Quote, "This is the way it is," unquote, is a typical way a hero communicates. They appear as if they know better than the other person, which leads to defensiveness with their mate. They usually are not good listeners. They also will tend to have a split personality, whereas they, in the beginning, can be flirtatious, wanting intimacy and companionship. Then after they get the person, the harder, controlling, got to fix it side comes out. They, looking on the positive side, are the most caring and will give anything to please as long as their mate is showing appreciation. Remember that, as long as they're showing appreciation. Aha. They expect their mate to give back in a way that they want, or their mate will see the hardcore, ugly side of them. The hero brings to the family a sense of accomplishment. All right, now you got the scapegoat. The scapegoat is the one who will provide a place for the family to displace their anger. This is the one that is typically not doing so well. Many times, it is the second child that winds up being the scapegoat. They feel picked on, mistreated, and becomes a rebel later on. They figure that if they are going to wear this label, then they will live it out, sometimes wildly. Their communication style will be to yell, slam the door as they are going to the bar. I'm out of here. Now you have the lost child. The lost child is the one that looks at the whole dysfunctional scene and pulls away. They become the chameleon. Anything you think you need. They deal with their anger by overeating or early pregnancy, addictions. It becomes hard to know what they are really feeling with the mask that they wear. They are in character so much that they might not know how they feel. They are very loving, giving, and caring as they focus on the other person instead of themselves. They are people pleasers. In relationships, they could go a long period of time in supposed peace until one day they have to face their own neglected feelings and they end the relationship. Their mate will have no idea of what happened. They also tend to go the way of addictions and codependency. They are great listeners and analyzers. Mates love them more than they love themselves. They are silent a lot and agree too much with their mates. Their mates need some assertiveness skills, to ask the right questions so they can get to know how the lost mate of theirs is really feeling. A good marriage is one where you match on the adult side, and when the child surfaces, be strong enough to share with your mate as to what is happening. This is what Jeff was saying. You also need to know your mate's child and reassure them that you are not the enemy. That's important. You also need to know your mate's child, you know, whether the lost child, scapegoat, and so forth, hero. And reassure them that you are not the enemy. You are in love with both the child and the adult, but you are in love with the adult side. Let me say it again. Let me correct myself. You love both the child and the adult, but you are in love with the adult side. There you go. A good technique to use in discussion where the child comes out, the mate can speak to the hurt instead of the anger. The hurt instead of the anger. And that's important. Now, finally, we have the mascot. Ah, the mascot. They bring humor to the family, the comedian. They tend to stay juvenile delinquents long after their adolescence. Their communication style is to not talk sincerely as much as they like to tease and joke around. Their mates have to guess as to what is really wrong with them. The hero types are attracted to the mascot because they will be a project, that's for sure. The lost child being depressed could go for the hero or mascot. The hero almost always grabs a scapegoat and vice versa. They will argue more with the scapegoat ranting and raving and the hero telling them how they need to straighten up. None of these matches will be good because they are always trying to get the other person to fulfill the needs they didn't get in childhood, and they can't do it. Looking at the positive side, mascots can be hilarious, bringing joy to situations. Oh, there I am. I guess. Thought I was lost there for a second. All right. Now, today, we have another great friend and supporter of the Reconnected Show. We have clinical psychologist Dr. E. Douglas Brown to talk about communication and listening skills as it relates to parents and their children. All right. All right. He says, the art of speaking and listening demands more than a tongue, lips, and ears. Before a toddler can utter a word, a toddler can recognize the sound of a word and associates it with pleasant or unpleasant experiences. Parents should teach the children that communicating and listening is easy, fun, and exciting. Unfortunately, many parents expect their children to listen simply because their children have ears and the parents are older and supposedly wiser. The brain has been marvelously constructed to decode vibrations in the air into neural electrical impulses. The impulses are consolidated into discrete sounds called words. But there is more. The sound words are associated with feelings and relationship tones. Lazy and uninformed parents use paralanguage when communicating with their children. Paralanguage consists of word fragments, slang, elevated voice tones, and guttural sounds often accompanied with exaggerated emotionality. It can also consist of a poverty of speech or conversation with a child, similar to selective mutism. In such cases, children often have to pressure their parents to talk to them or simply remain quiet until spoken to. Now, good. Well, it's a mouthful there, so without further ado, Dr. Brown, help me out. How you doing?
Thank you so much. Good morning, Nazim. How are you this morning?
All right, wonderful, wonderful,
yeah, I was
wonderful.
Purposely, I worded it like that to hopefully stimulate discussion, and individuals in the audience may want to probe into some of the things that I was saying there.
Yes, that definitely stimulates the discussions and questions from my perspective even, so this is very good. And also, as I was reading the synopsis from last week, I'm sure that you had a lot of interest there too.
Yes,
indeed. I know in your field you deal a lot with codependency and so forth and dysfunctional roles. So I said, boy, I'm sure you were saying, man, that's my area too. I can
right
talk
up
about
my
that
alley, right up my alley. In terms of personality and emotions, you know.
Yeah, and you can see how I'm taking this communication, listening skills, and really dissecting it so people can get around a holistic view of communication and listening skills so they can really see how they can apply. Because sometimes if you're talking in a certain area, a lot of people will not hear it. It won't affect certain people. So they'll say, well, he's not talking to me.
Right,
you see,
right.
And you start talking about different perspectives, the workplace, personal, parent, child. Oh, eventually they'll get it, you know.
And that eventually is a very long word.
Yeah, that's right. But one thing about that word, it says that one day.
one day, you know, one day they'll get it.
Yeah, one day it's going to be yours. And so, oh, okay, all right, the light bulb moment will be yours.
Well,
I'm looking
forward to the discussion.
Now, I'll tell you, we're talking about parent and child here, and there's a lot of issues here we got to talk about. Now, from what I just read, which came from you, that by itself is so important because, as you know, a lot of time parents are surprised when they see reactions from their children at very early age, even like, you know, 2 years old.
They say
certain things to them. Their words are saying certain kind of things, but the body language says something else.
Totally different.
And a toddler responds to the body language, not the words.
Right.
Help us out with that.
Okay. Well, first of all, it's, you know, probably important to know that we are human beings. We have specialized what they call neural structures in our brain. It's kind of like saying we are a Ferrari, but we've got special parts in the Ferrari. We've got some added features. And among the added features in the Ferrari that we are is our ability to communicate, to use language and speech.
Oh.
Now, you know, when you talk about the brain, the nervous system, mainly the brain, that's what we're talking about. Now, I just want to share a couple of facts with you, just facts with the audience. A number of people probably are aware of it, too. You see, a human infant is able to focus on specific features of speech, not just sounds, but you know how they are made, specific sounds, what they are. Now, I'll get to that in a few minutes. I'll tell you how that relates to emotions and relationships.
Okay. All right.
Now, most of us are familiar with the fact that we all know when a baby sees mommy and mommy smiles and she's coochie, you know, she's using language.
Right.
She's talking to that infant and communicating to that infant affection and care. You see, communication starts long before the child can speak.
Uh-oh.
You know, there are a number of studies, for example, that point out that babies actually tend to synchronize and coordinate their movements according to the sounds that they hear from adults. Isn't that interesting?
Wow.
Isn't that interesting? In preparation for the show today, what I did is kind of basically divided speech, you know, language, communication into one or the other category, and it's very simple, and I'll elaborate. Approach or avoidance.
Okay.
The communication of speech either is saying to the child or the infant, come close to me. I want to be with you. Let's do it together. Or the communication, the words, the tones are saying, get back. Why are you here? Why are you around me? You see what I'm saying in terms of avoidance?
Right.
See, we're developing brain cells hundreds, if not thousands, in terms of infancy within a matter of hours. And that child listens to these sounds, and as many people I'm sure in your listening audience know, that child is listening to the sound and looking at the face. Is that face warm? Is it smiling? Is it saying, I'm happy to be with you?
Mm.
In other words, that facial, these physical features, these facial features are associated with sounds, right?
Mm-hmm.
Associated with voice and sound. And before there's a word or words, there is a communication. And that communication does what? It conveys care, acceptance. It may convey positive relation tones. When I say before there's a word, I mean before the child can, in fact, utter the word.
Mm-hmm.
You see where I'm going with this?
Yes, yes, yes.
You know what I'm saying here? One of the things that I caution parents against, don't overdo it in trying to communicate in a manner to convey love and acceptance to your child. Don't overdo it. Just be natural. Be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's your child. That's your loved one. Communicate to that child in a natural way, in a warm way, in an intuitive way.
Mm-hmm.
The child can pick up the rest.
All right.
What's very important, one of the things very important is that the speech itself, right? Right? When I speak to my child, I look my child in the eyes. I smile. I'm warm. I'm accepting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm accepting. Now imagine what happens with an infant or child that is only hearing a parent's voice or hears adult's voice, quote unquote, when it's about criticism, when it's limited to a directive, go do this, go do that, or criticism. That creates a certain pattern, right? A certain type of relationship tone. When, for example, a child may conclude, when big people speak to me, that means I did something wrong.
Okay.
When big people speak to me, I don't really know. What do they feel about me? In other words, language is not limited to sounds and the words we use.
Mm-hmm.
Language or communication is in our verb, in our physical, so to speak, demeanor. You see,
mm-hmm.
voice tone. Do we use, when we talk to our children, are we talking in intuitive, calm, natural voice? Or, in some occasions, we raise our voice. And, loud voice tones can be frightening.
Right.
Or threatening. And, if I get a daily dose of those loud voice tones and, so to speak, cat eyes, that's going to create some avoidance behavior. I'm going to be somewhat isolated and not really want to talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really like to talk to people because, if that continues over time, going back to the word eventually, if this continues over time, I'm going to be what some people call, people can be non-social. I don't like to talk to people. I'm not a good talker. That's something
mm-hmm.
that I really don't want to do.
Wow.
Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Going
with that?
And actually, it seems that they'll start developing patterns of inferiority, actually, as they grow up. Would
yes.
you say?
Yes, indeed. Inferiority complex, right?
Wow.
A child, right, that child can begin to question their worth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't want to exaggerate the effect, but we certainly want to make it very clear that understanding that when I talk, when I'm relating to my child, I'm creating a relationship tone. It changes, it varies, but you see, that's a relationship.
Mm.
Human language, unlike, other maybe vertebrae or other animals, human language is especially, the sounds we make are meant to convey emotions, to convey feelings, to give symbols to feelings, Like, let
mm-hmm.
me give you an example. Let me give you an example. And I'm kind of crude at this, but you'll understand.
That's okay.
Now, I'm going to say I love you in two different ways, all right?
All right.
Now, this is, okay, the first one, I love you, all right?
Okay.
Now, this is the second one. I love you very much. I love you. Right?
Okay.
Now, you heard the second one, right?
Yes.
Can you pick up the difference between the two?
Yes.
You want me to go with the first one again?
Do it.
I love you.
Okay.
The second, I love you very much. You know, I really love you. Come over here. I love you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
now, you see
one
the
is, difference? Yes. Second one sounds more sincere.
More sincere.
Mm-hmm.
More caring.
Mm-hmm.
More embracing, more acceptance. More feeling tone, right?
Yes.
Right. And when we talk about abused children, right? Children that are victims of physical abuse, varying types of abuse, which also usually include neglect.
Yes.
Anytime you're talking about communication gaps, too, you know, parents not communicating to them in a natural, intuitive, loving, accepting way. See?
Mm-hmm.
I should add this as well. How would you feel if I only spoke to you when I told you, were you hungry or you had to go to bed?
Mm.
Right. If that's basically what you hear from me all the time, go eat, okay? Just watch TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got more
very
directing
shallow.
All the time. Yeah, very directing all the time. And where's the empathy and compassion there?
Excellent. You got those words right there. Excellent. Where is the empathy? Where is the compassion? Where are those particular human traits, intuitive traits in terms of, you know, building nutrient relationships? Also nutrients. Nurture.
Oh.
Right?
Okay.
You see, communication with our children, exchange, communication is also an aspect of nutrients. Because, you see, children want to communicate. They want to communicate. Children love talking. They love telling you about their projects, ideas, and feelings. And it's up to us parents to motivate them. And, you know, to motivate them, encourage them to talk when they want to talk to us, and be there when they talk. Don't be reading the paper.
Right. Oh yeah.
You know, it's really amazing. It's really amazing how communication is very much involved in a child developing a sense of self-esteem.
Yes. And please tell me about this para language you were mentioning before.
Right, para language.
Para language, yes.
Oh, the para language, right?
Yeah,
para language. Para language is not using words correctly. It's using phrases.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Just throwing out phrases. Not talking to children in a clear manner. You know. Obviously, it includes slang. It includes colloquialisms. But it doesn't reach the threshold of language. Of language. That's para-language.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying here?
Mm.
Sometimes as adults, tend to innocently and naively kind of feel that a child doesn't really understand quote-unquote big words. All right?
Okay.
What is a big word? Well, a child could care less what a big word is. A child is listening to sounds and hearing you speak. See?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes an adult may feel that the child is more attentive. You know, if I am overly emotional and I, you know, elevated voice, tone and emotion. But that's not true. It's not true. Emotion is there. We're human, you know. Happiness, you know. I don't have to drown out what I'm saying with my emotion. You may want to help me clarify that for our audience as well. You know,
now, hold on. Now, I want to back a little bit, little small rewind here on this paralanguage here again.
Right.
And
right.
If you can break this down more so and see how, in an example format, how a parent would do that to a child and how and what expectation that parent, the uninformed parent, would have of that child using paralanguage.
Well, one of the things is by using paralanguage, let's try to look at this. Let's kind of paralanguage, let's say.
Okay.
It's time for you to get ready to go to bed. That's not paralanguage. That's a statement, right? It's time
All
for
right.
you to get ready to go to bed. Now, this is paralanguage. Get in the bed. Go on in there and get under them sheets. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Paralanguage is, you better get in that bed, boy. You better get in that, you hear that, the sounds I'm making?
Okay.
Time to go to bed. You can see the fluctuations in my language like that.
Okay.
I have to communicate clearly. It doesn't mean I'm devoid of emotion. I just have to communicate clearly.
What does that do exactly when a parent talks like that? What does the child receive?
The child receives those sounds and confusion. In this sense, the child receives a sound and a command, right?
Uh-huh.
But he doesn't receive clarity in terms of as a child develops, the brain develops, and language development and communication skills develop. See? This is a reason, not the sole reason, but this is a reason why we find many children who have difficulty in school, you see, in terms of communication.
Mm-hmm.
You follow me in this regard?
Yeah, a little bit, yes, a little bit there, yes. You're saying that they aren't getting clarity.
Right, children have to be given opportunities to learn how to talk.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
They
got all the
yeah.
equipment. They have to be given opportunities to learn how to talk. And we are their first teachers. We're not talking about being proper. We're just talking about being clear. You know, not using paralanguage.
Because
if that child is not given an opportunity to talk, when it comes time to speak, they're going to have problems.
Varying degrees
of problems.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Yes, very clear there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now,
what
also, I'll tell you what. Let's take a little rewind here again. I want to be
okay.
It's totally clear now. Just going back to the example you made. Boy, get in that bed. Get on them sheets. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now the child hears. Now, first of all, the child knows. Okay, I gotta get my butt in bed. Okay, the child got that message there. But
right.
What else is the child getting though besides that order?
I'm irritated with you.
Ah,
you are displeasing me.
Okay.
You know, I don't like you.
Oh, okay. So child is getting okay. So child is getting a feeling of irritation.
Irritation. See, annoyance from the adult.
Okay.
There you go. That's it. There you go.
All right.
That's the hidden message. That's the hidden language. That's the other speech, if you will, a communication that's being, you know, thrown out there, so to speak, put out there.
So the child is getting, daddy or mommy, daddy is annoyed with me. He's irritated with me. Is that what the child
right.
is getting also?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I see. Okay, so this is making it clear here now. So you also said that when a person talks in paralanguage, they're really using. You mentioned poverty of speech, so they are choosing to not speak clearly because they feel it's not necessary. Is that what the deal is there?
Right. The adult feels that it's not necessary, or the way I'm talking is a more effective way to communicate. And it's not fair to the child.
Okay.
That's not fair.
All right. And it's not fair. It's not fair because?
Because the child has all of the equipment, this Ferrari and all these extra, you know, things that go along. The child is equipped, ready, motivated to learn how to communicate, to speak, to, you know, to join emotions with speech, and the child is being cheated. See?
I see. And also talk more about how that right there, that plants a seed for problems in their communication from that point on. Because you got adolescent, you get the, you know, all different stages of childhood, then you have adolescents coming on too. And what are the tendencies when that's not corrected early on before the child goes to school?
If it's not corrected, the child or adolescent tends to do what? They embrace the paralanguage, okay? They don't like school. They don't want to go to school. They feel embarrassed. They don't like to be in class. I even knew of a situation where this person wasn't quite an adult. This was a young child who made excuses to peers and what have you, literally not to bring her friends home. She didn't even want her friends to come into the house because her parent tended to be hostile.
Okay.
And she would kind of, you know, detour her friends because she didn't want to feel embarrassed, and she didn't want her mom to hurt their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Her mom tended to be a little irritating in the way she speaks. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
Where the child can kind of like generalize this and actually get into a mode where the child is embarrassed, wants to protect the peers. One of the things that is important to convey with language with the children, I don't mean, of course, you know, I'm not talking about words, but empowerment. Now, what is empowerment for the child? Empowerment is a feeling that I count.
Mm.
The feeling that I count.
Okay. Mm.
In other words, let's go back to a word you used before. A parent that is empathic, that shows empathy.
Yes.
Empathic parent. In contrast to the parent who was hostile.
And distant, yes.
Right. Now, they both can be essentially saying the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
In two different ways. Children, you see, that are subjected to that kind of stuff, you know, those negative relationship tones?
Yes.
They actually, I mean, we don't want to exaggerate it, but sometimes children would avoid their parents. They don't like to go home. They really, you know, those social hours and family, they don't like to be present. They don't want to be around. They don't want to hear, you know, that kind of tone.
Mm. Now how about the kids who actually, they don't like that, but if that's all they're exposed to, it becomes a kind of a normal standard within them. So then when they relate to others, they'll do the same thing. How about that?
They'll do the same thing. This is where the uninformed parent, right, or the parent who's subjected to that basically mimics or imitates the parenting style that they were exposed to, that he or she was exposed to with his or her own child, right?
Mm-hmm.
See?
Mm-hmm.
Let me kind of ask you this rhetorically. I don't mean for you to answer it, but, you know, answer it.
Sure.
Okay, love-oriented talk. Love-oriented talk, speech, communication. Love-oriented talk and speech to build a relationship. Okay, you see where I'm going?
Okay.
In contrast, you have punitive talk. You have a language that is very controlled, very punitive. You know, I'm over you. I have control over you. You know,
mm-hmm.
don't move until I tell you to move.
Yes.
See, empathy, love, care, acceptance. See? Now, there's a D word that you got to be careful about using with your children. You want me to tell you what the D word is?
Please.
Dumb.
Uh-oh.
Dumb.
Mm. Tell me about that impact.
This is my parent. This is my mom and my dad. Now, intuitively, I feel that my mom and my dad care about me more than anybody else, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my mom calls me dumb. Can't get any dumber than that.
Mm-hmm.
Mama calls me dumb and stupid all the time. I mean, she should know. Came out of her womb.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the way I communicate with my children affects their level. It doesn't cause, you know, but it can affect their achievement. It can affect their attention span. See? It can, you know, the level of motivation and other things they do as children, as they're growing up. It
yes.
can affect their sense of security, right?
Okay.
If, mm-hmm. if my language conveys empathy, acceptance, care, and conveys security, does my language convey security and safety? My smile, the way I talk, the way I look, how I say what I'm saying, my voice talk. Right.
Mm. Also, how about their learning in school?
That's exactly it. The achievement.
Yes.
The learning.
Achievement level. Yes. Yes, right there. Yes.
Mm-hmm. The learning in school. You know, children can be spoken to in a manner where they are afraid to talk. They don't want to talk a lot. They don't want to speak. They're scared to talk. I'm scared to talk. You know, I don't want to talk a lot because talking and communicating hasn't been, you know, that hadn't been put a high on the level. You know, it's like, oh, I'm, you know, that associating positive relationship talk with just speech and communication. See?
Mm-hmm. Now, say when the kids are asked to speak in classroom, and a parent calls on little Johnny over there to talk about the homework last night, and they came from this kind of a home culture, they don't want to talk. Talk about that pressure right there at that moment. The child doesn't want to talk. They would like to express themselves, but they don't feel comfortable in talking.
They don't want to talk. They do not want they don't want to be embarrassed. They don't want to feel ashamed.
Okay.
Let's say it's a homework assignment that, you know, it's one of those assignments where you got to sit down with mom or dad or somebody to help you with it.
Uh-huh.
And they were at home and mom or dad kind of brushed them off, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to go back class the next day and did you, Johnny or Jane, do your homework? They don't want to be sitting in that seat in class to say, well, my mama didn't help me out. She didn't do anything. They didn't help me. I couldn't solve the problem or do it because nobody was helping me.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Children, I want to make mention of this, too. I want to make mention of this. Language, you know, relationship tones and learning how to speak is also related to coping skills. A person developing coping skills in life.
Mm-hmm.
The more that I'm, you know, the more that I communicate with my child, the more accommodating, neutral, and empathic it is, and clear. When I clear, it means that I'm speaking just simply clear.
Mm-hmm.
I'm teaching, actually, these are tools my child is learning to communicate with other people and to cope in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
The relationship skills, right?
Right, exactly.
Because those relationship skills, they begin right there in that home environment. Children
yep.
that receive a lot of punitive communication, children that tend to, where they don't have, you know, they're not motivated language-wise, you don't have the empathy and acceptance.
Yes.
When they grow older, they are half present in their relationships.
Mm.
In other words, they're not fully receiving, okay? Communicating.
Okay.
Because they have experience.
So, okay, because, all right, I see. So, therefore, the children, they get their emotional skills from the tones and body language they receive even before they could talk. Is that what you're saying?
Even before they can utter a word other than the, you know, mama, danda. The language is already being developed in terms of the relationship, though.
So emotional skills, and that's very important. A lot, you know, you don't hear a lot of people talk about that, the emotional skills. Where does that really come from, and how is that developed? You know, you don't hear about that. And,
right.
And you don't hear about that. You know, you talk about people developing the communication skills, learning, you know, in didactic situations and schooling and so forth and all that. But as far as your emotional skills, how do you relate to people without using words? I mean, how good are you in that area?
Absolutely. That's right.
You see?
You're absolutely right.
And where are you getting that from? Where does it come from? And I don't feel you can go to a certain curriculum to get that. You know, this comes before you knew how to talk yourself.
Absolutely. Yes, indeed. It starts before you can talk, right?
Yeah, I say, okay, yes. Your emotional skills. This is why it's so important. I used to work with teenage pregnant and parenting girls. I was a contractor in a school for 2 years with these pregnant and parenting. And I would hear the language, and I would say, oh, my God, when are you going to stop the cycle of abuse? I mean, here these kids are all from abuse situations. Now they got kids, they're doing the same thing. And I said, whoa, stop the cycle. It said, all right. They always say they want a better life for their girls, okay? Better life for their children, better life for their babies. But what they're doing the exact same thing. They might say, their words might be proper, possibly. Sometimes that's improper too. But they might say the proper thing, but their their body language is totally opposite.
Totally opposite.
Yeah,
that's what I meant when I said it's more than having a 2 ears and a tongue, right? When I was commenting about, you know, language is much more than that.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And that's why the emotional part, even before the child comes out, wouldn't you agree that while the child
in the womb, in utero,
mm-hmm.
in the womb, right?
Mm-hmm.
See, in terms of basic feelings and basic relationships, human beings learn words to associate these basic feelings and relationships with. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I learned the words that in effect mirror these relationships. See, the word is a sound. It communicates something, but it's also how I use the word. Not in terms of anything like grammar, but how I say it.
Yes.
I can, like I gave the example earlier in the show, you know, where I used the phrase, I love you. Now, I can say that devoid of any feeling, any emotion, any real sincere emotion, or I can say it clearly in a manner, see, where it's got the emotion with it. That's what's meant by clear language.
Mm-hmm.
Clear language is like when I say, I love you. If I just say, I love you, that's not clear. What makes that clear is the feeling tone in it.
Mm-hmm.
Follow me?
Yes, 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 yes.
The empathy, the care, the acceptance.
Yes.
The validation.
Yes. Yes, wonderful. And Dr. Douglas Brown, I'm going to end with this idea, and this is wonderful because now, see, next week, I'm actually going to take the show, and I'm going to read a section from my book. Now, all the things we're talking about on this whole series of communication skills, we touched on some areas that I'm going to elaborate on next week. Now, we talked about empathy today. We talked about compassion today. Last week, we were talking about paraphrasing a little bit, and we talked about some eye gestures a week before that. Next week, I'm going to talk about all those aspects in detail so we know exactly what active listening is, what paraphrasing really is, what empathy really is compared to sympathy, all that comes next week. See, we're going to talk about that. See, that way, it brings everything back home.
Everything. Full circle.
Yeah, it's full circle.
Full circle.
Last week's mom might say, you know what, I want to hear more about that paraphrase. I want to hear more about that empathy.
Paralanguage.
I want to hear more about eye messages. That's what next week's going to be about. I'm going to talk about all that then. And then you'll say, now I understand Dr. Brown more. Oh, okay, now I got it. Or I might understand Jeff Gaisley more. I understand McConaughey more.
Right.
That's what they were saying. I didn't know that because what happened, Dr. Brown, like all these other people, they're professionals in their field, and they're talking. Sometimes, it's not any kind of negative here, but sometimes they talk as if you already know certain things that, like, you
clarify it. That's definitely
we're somebody kind of know certain things. That's why we're kind of talking, and but that's okay because next week all that will come together full circle. And now you'll say, oh, now I got the whole thing.
Beautiful.
And that's what we're going to do. So, Dr. can you? I know you are directing a community here in Arizona, but just in case, I always like to have a way for somebody to get in touch with you.
Mm-hmm.
So in case someone wants to talk to you about any kind of area or they might want to be referred to
let me give you my email address.
Please do that.
Right, let me give you my email. That's very quick, right? E as in Edward, D as in dog, B as in boy, R as in Robert, N as in no, at cox.net. EDDRN at cox.net.
Okay. Everybody, say it one more time, please. One more time.
EDBRN at cox.net.
There we go.
Thank
Wonderful.
You.
And I think
Thank
that
so much.
If I think that you are on my, if you aren't, did you go to my show page and put that information on the comment section? Did you do that already?
I think I'll do it. I think I have, but I'll just check to make sure.
Okay, if you haven't done that, do that so then people can go to the show page, which is Blog Talk Radio, www.blogtalkradio.com/reconnected. And on the comment section on the middle part, the little column on the middle part, scroll down to there and you'll see my guests there and their information as to how you can get in touch with them and get the help that you need. Okay, so wonderful. We have it now. And Dr. Brown,
thank you.
But please feel free to, you know, tune in next week, kind of listen in. And I'm always asking people to do that. And more people listen online. And also, let me tell you that we had a significant increase in listenership. Last week, we had 262 people listen to the program after the show.
Wow.
Now, when you're alone,
there is hope.
And when you're on last time, we averaged. Is there something? Now, last time you were on, we averaged about 25 people after the show. And you about two people listen online, live online. So we're from about 25 now to 262.
Wow, that's great.
And we're averaging, and we before that we had 232. So mm-hmm. I don't know where these people are coming from, but what happens, because everything is internet-based, the word mm-hmm. is getting out there. See?
That's right.
And one person even said, Nazim, you have now, you and your wife are now started a global ministry.
That is beautiful.
I said, I never thought about it like that.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that something? So people are tuning
in. Yes, it is. It clearly is. It clearly is.
They want help. And a lot of times mm-hmm. people are embarrassed to seek psychologists, therapists, counselors. They're
right.
embarrassed.
Right.
They need to. They're embarrassed. So they said, but they need help somewhere. And mm-hmm. now they can get the help they need to have. There's no bill.
Great job.
There's no embarrassment. And they can get help, and they can email for more additional help, get a lot of good free advice, and they can even, you know, buy for small costs DVDs or small books from my various guests. They can do all this without any shame or embarrassment, and they can get the help they need to get finally.
Right.
And that's what we're doing here on the Reconnected Show. And that's what we're doing. And even the name Reconnected, the thing about that, audience, is that when you are disconnected from anything that you want, that's why you're not getting what you want to have.
That's right.
It could be in relationships. It could be in money. It could mm-hmm. be in joy. It could be in a good relationship with God. If you're
That's
disconnected,
true. See,
if you're disconnected, you get nothing. But when you reconnect, then the juice starts flowing.
Yes, indeed.
And communication, yes. when a parent connects with a child, And that mother connects through the eyes with that child knows they are loved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yes, indeed. We're talking about communication. That's just, now we're talking about a full plate with all of the ingredients involved right there.
That's some serious communication. And no words has to be spoken. Those eyes right there connect. You know, that child is breastfeeding at the time and is getting that physical nutrients and the eyes connecting at the same time. You cannot beat that. That's the match right there.
That's a match. And it's just the best match we can conceive of.
That's right.
Do you know that they've done research on the suckling response when a baby is breastfeeding? And they've actually done research that shows that when infants hear the suckling response, they actually become alert, their attention. You know, that there's an elevation of attention and calmness in infants when they hear the suckling response, hear that suckling noise.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Also, there's an auditory kind of stimulation there too, huh?
Right, that's communication, isn't it?
Yeah, and I didn't think about that. Isn't that something? So that... That's really something.
Mm-hmm.
The suckling response, that auditory,
right.
Is something. That's really something.
It's auditory, right? But that ear, right? The auditory, right?
Yes,
the
suckling
sound, right?
Yes. Isn't that something?
And they clearly research to show that the infants display greater sense of calm. They tend to be alert when they hear the suckling response.
Wow. I love it. This is why a lot of times when you hear New Age music, you hear the sound of water flowing. You hear Mike a little a heartbeat in the background. You wonder why you feel automatically calm.
That's right. That's right.
It reminds me of that suckling response. You're laying on that the mother's belly there.
Mm-hmm.
You hear the heartbeat there. The suckling response. And
mm-hmm.
that, the water sounds there, you're hearing that. And that brings you back to your
keep
origins.
Keep on,
you know?
Nazim. Keep on, right on. That's right.
Yeah, isn't this something? Boy.
Yes, it is.
It's amazing. I love it. Okay, so we're going to stop.
All right.
Stop. You know what? I invite you to come back next week, and we're going to have a good time. And thank you again. And thank you for everybody
so
coming
much,
back to the Reconnected Show. And I appreciate that. Thank you for everything. Thank you, Dr. Brown.
Thank you so much. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now.